periodic status review. My favorite, I'm looking at the exact, my favorite listing of recovery section.
Sorry. Good afternoon. Chair Smith, Director Unsworth, members of the commission, thank you for having us again. We're here to talk today about the Columbia sharp-tailed grouse. And I'm here with our wildlife biologist, Derek Stinson, who's the species lead for this critter. And he's going to walk you through our periodic status review, and then we have time for there's time for questions, and I believe there's public input as well. And then decision, not until next month.
Good afternoon, Commissioners, Director. I'm going to talk about sharp-tailed grouse. The Columbian sharp-tailed grouse is the rarest of six subspecies. It's been state threatened since 1998. We completed a recovery plan in 2012. They currently occupy approximately 8% of their historical range. They're not federally listed. The subspecies was petitioned twice in 1995 and 2004. The service found that was not warranted based on large populations in Idaho and Colorado, where they're still a hunted species, and also the beneficial effects of CRP and Farm Bill programs. It's a species of grassland and more mesic shrub step. That's where they nest and spend the summer. In the winter, they are dependent on riparian trees and shrubs. In the summer, they're eating forbs, grass, insects, and berries. And in the winter, they're eating buds and fruits of water birch, willow, service berry, hawthorn, rose, snowberry. The males display on leks similar to sage grouse. The female then lays 10 eggs, around 10 eggs. They generally nest within a mile or so of the lek, and they winter within 8 or so miles of the lek. Historically, they were the most abundant game bird in Washington. There may have been over 100,000 of them here, and the center of abundance was probably the Palouse Prairie. They declined with the spread and intensification of agriculture, which resulted in loss of nesting riparian habitat, and tillage destroyed seasonal creeks. 20 years ago, I read an anecdote that hired hands in the Palouse would insist their contract state that they wouldn't be fed prairie chickens more than twice a week. And I haven't been able to find that in recent years where I read that. So the species declined, and that decline continued through the 20th century. And their range, they retreated so that today they're restricted to 8 or so local populations. The 2017 estimate of their population based on lek counts is 608. And unfortunately, all the local populations are under 200. Department lands have been very important in maintaining these local populations, and several of the wildlife area units were purchased specifically to support remnant populations of sharptails. That includes Swanson Lakes, Scotch Creek, Tunk, and the Chisaw unit. Factors affecting include continued loss and fragmentation of habitat, and then kind of degradation, including fences, roads, excessive grazing, tree invasion of the grassland. The small population size of these local populations, and then generalist predators such as ravens, which are a nest predator, their population has quadrupled in the past 30 years. And wildfires, the recent wildfires resulted in a displacement of populations where they have to move to unfamiliar areas and likely encounter more predation. That shift of the vegetation from more shrub to grass-dominated may actually improve habitat. In fact, in the upper Midwest, the Native American name for sharptails is translated firebird because the fire removes the fields that have succeeded to shrubbery, and then the sharptails come back. But there was probably some loss of winter habitat, although from what I hear, most of that is recovering nicely. Recovery actions. We have augmented several of the small populations that were at risk between 1998-2013. We released 430 birds from adjacent states at Scotch Creek, West Foster Creek, locations on the Colville Reservation, and in Lincoln County. The bulk of those birds went to Lincoln County because we had a graduate research project going on there that included a sage-grouse reintroduction, and so we had staff on the ground who were able to radio track the birds. And the result of those augmentations has generally been very positive, and this pattern is very typical of when we do an augmentation, that the population does respond and does improve, at least for several years. And we hope to get permits to do additional translocations in the next 2 years and release birds in Tunk Valley and Scotch Creek. And if funding becomes available in the Greenaway area on the Colville Reservation and in Douglas County, and we've initiated some feasibility assessment of reintroducing birds to the Metal Valley. Farm Bill programs such as CRP and SAFE are very important. There's over 73,000 acres enrolled in the sage and sharp-tailed grouse SAFE in Douglas County alone. The various colors in that figure are the acres enrolled in specific years, year signups. And the yellow in the figure on the right is the shrub step SAFE areas. Uncertainties, however, is that the current farm bill expires at the end of September, and it's uncertain exactly what the next farm bill will look like, what programs will continue, and what changes might occur. Other recovery activities include planting riparian winter habitat. We planted over 100,000 trees and shrubs. Removed over 100 miles of unneeded fences, which are a collision hazard for grouse, and restored over 3,000 acres of agricultural fields to native vegetation. We also have an active working group and partner relationship with the Colville Reservation Agency and nonprofit groups, and an active involvement of volunteers to help monitor birds. The recovery plan indicated that the species should be uplisted if the population drops to less than 450. Our current estimate is 608. And so to be consistent with the recovery plan, our recommendation is that the sharptail should remain on the list of threatened species. However, we do recognize that all the local populations are now below 200 birds, which is a concern, and they all likely require augmentation. The major wildfires that occurred in 2015 certainly had a negative short-term effect. The longer-term effect is it remains to be seen, and habitat connectivity continues to diminish. Public comments. We received four during the comment period. Three supported keeping the sharp-tailed grouse listed, and they didn't specify at what level. And one suggested delisting. The Wildlife Diversity Advisory Council, the recommendation was that they should be uplisted to endangered. Now we'll entertain questions.
Thank you for the great presentation. And we talked a little bit about this in Wildlife Committee this morning. And I know Kim and I have been coming to the meetings, and it's been, you know, it's a real interesting subject. I think the whole concept of upgrading to endangered or leaving it threatened has us all about on the fence. You know, that number hasn't been reached, but we're getting close. And if you look at history, it's still a downward trend. And then those other circumstances, I think, have me worried. The acres of coming out of CRP in Douglas County, I think this year is somewhere around 20,000 acres without a fill-in program to get landowners to keep them in that. There's a chance that we could see a lot of grasslands come out going back into cropland. We don't know that for sure. And then something that Commissioner Thornburn mentioned this morning was we wonder what those numbers would be without the augmentation. You know, would we really be way below 450, I would expect. And so we're already on a path to having to artificially keep this population supported. Anyway, in my mind, it brings the question up that an upgrade, I think, still is a reasonable possibility to endangered, as long as I think we have to make sure that if that was to happen or the commission was to vote on that, the public and the ranchers and the farmers, which a lot of them are doing great things for sharptail and sage grouse right now. There's a lot of them entering them into the SAFE program. They're doing a lot of activities for these birds and through a lot of different programs and organizations and agencies to help make sure that this doesn't send a bad signal, that there's some outreach that would go with it that talks about this is just an awareness level. We've got to get this thing a little bit more up on the list. It doesn't mean people are going to come and take away your farming tools or anything like that, you know, because there is a fear of that out there. So I just wanted to bring that up.
Thank you. Not a question, a statement. I'm actually going to be a little bit stronger than my colleagues. I would hope that the commission will ask for an uplisting. The 450 in the recovery plan, I at this point don't think applies to our population. We're not a population in total. We're a whole bunch of discrete, disconnected subpopulations, less than 200, which is biologically non-viable. So we're basically blinking. We're losing this bird. The only reason, Derek, I was going to ask you to go back to the slide of where we've done augmentations and then back up and show us those subpopulation populations. It was Scotch Creek, Foster Creek, and Lincoln County where we've done, I think it was that one, where we've done the augmentations.
You can see it all here.
Yeah, you go forward. Go forward to the augmentation one first. Scotch Creek, Foster Creek, and Lincoln County, and the Colville Reservation. And then go back to our subpopulations. Look where we have birds. It's where we've done the augmentations, which is the point that Commissioner Keeney made. The only reason we've got birds is we're bringing into our population. We've been, while we adopted a recovery plan in 2012, we've been working on recovery of this species for longer than that.
Yes.
I absolutely agree that we need to do public outreach to ensure our partners that this is not going to hurt them. In fact, we're going to have to go back to our recovery plan. We'll have to change that number at least. And I think we need to change some other things. It needs to become a little bit more integrated. We need to look at this issue of corridors. We've done a lot of connectivity research. We are not going to have a viable population of sharptails if we can't get these birds connected, unless we just keep dumping birds in. But the Columbian sharptail isn't doing well anywhere. We're not, you know, who's going to keep giving us Columbian sharptails to add to our population? So I think it is time to uplist, and I hope that my fellow commissioners will agree that it means going back to the recovery plan, rethinking it in a more integrated fashion. We've been doing recovery for a long time, and the trend is this. So I just wanted to put that forward.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions, one kind of a biological question and then one on the practical effect of changing from threatened to endangered. So on the matter of bringing in birds from Utah and places far away, is there a genetic concern about hybridizing this strain?
So we looked at the genetics before we initiated that, that study suggested that those populations were appropriate sources for augmentation of our birds.
And cite again, who said that?
We had a genetic study done, and they looked at the genetics of Columbian sharp-tailed grouse and indicated that British Columbia, Idaho, or Utah would be appropriate sources for augmentation of our populations.
And the question about the practical effect on slide number 6, as Commissioner Thorne reports out, number 6 is a pretty terrible picture there. So in terms of a change from threatened to endangered, if it did happen, what differences would that make for the birds, and what impacts would that be to landowners or anybody else?
I'll take that one.
Oh, go ahead.
So there is a slight regulatory change in the WAC between threatened or protected species, which includes threatened and sensitive species, and endangered species. And that's really only about the actual take of those individual animals, so killing, harming individual animals. And it's a shift from a misdemeanor to a first a gross misdemeanor and then a first felony. Class A felony, I think it is. And then as far as land use changes, so the sharp-tailed grouse is already a priority habitats and species identified. It's a PHS species, which is what the local jurisdictions wrap into their land use regulations. So the Critical Areas Ordinance is part of the Growth Management Act. So there's no guidance in the WAC that I am aware of that shifts the difference between threatened and endangered.
Well, just as a follow-up, to try to believe that if they were uplisted,
sure,
that graph might change. Is that what I hear you saying is maybe not just from the threatened and endangered change that would require getting into the recovery plan and doing something substantive to the positive?
So what does change is everything that the other commissioners are talking about, the awareness, bringing in a sort of the bell ringing that this is really something we need to be focusing on, more focusing on, brings in more partners. It could make other grants, could make us more competitive for grants to support sharp-tailed grouse if we have an endangered status versus a threatened status. It can bring, like I said, attention from other parties. We are certainly already focused and working on sharp-tailed grouse conservation. And just in response to the recovery planning shifts, one thing we've been working on internally is a conservation strategy. So it takes that framework of a recovery plan and puts it into more something implementable so that we can really take those steps that implement those actions in the recovery plan, because recovery plan sort of outlines all the things we need to do. It's the frame to get us there. And what we've been working on is what are the stepwise pieces to achieve connectivity, to build a source population internally, to augment, et cetera.
Is the sharp tail on the IUCN red list?
I don't know.
No, probably not, because
we can find out for you, certainly.
Yeah, whether the subspecies, probably wouldn't be either. Idaho and Colorado still have robust populations. Idaho was, up until recently, was harvesting 4,000 birds a year.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Commissioner Carpenter?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my lifetime, and I know I'm going to change to a non-native species, it's pheasants. They, for all intent and purposes, disappeared in eastern Washington. Disappeared. I wouldn't even want to guess the decrease, but having spent a lot of years over there in the past hunting, and now you don't even see one, is bad. But the one thing that nobody ever wants to talk about, they always want to talk about this critter or that critter, and we're going to do this, and we're going to throw money at that. But when it comes time to talk about predators, nobody wants to deal with it. Nobody wants to face it. It's the same thing when dealing with marine mammals. How much has the coyote population increased in eastern Washington in the last 20 years? A lot. And how many do they eat a week? So, I just think at some point we got to face the facts, figure out what we're going to manage for what. Because we just can't keep throwing money at it. We got to fix something.
Yeah, I agree.
Adjust it anyway. Maybe not fix it. Tune it up a little bit.
Certainly predator management is something we talk about as we're talking about conservation of these species. And with other species, we even have their strategies for actually implementing predator management. And so it's definitely something that we need to talk about, something that WAFWA is also talking about, and sort of what are those wide-ranging strategies for things like crow and raven.
Well, help me a little bit, because I know what talking about it means, but what about doing it?
I'll give you some examples. Those three predators for this particular bird, ravens, coyotes, and owls, they love ag. They love humans. We're sort of the source of them. And I think often when we think predator management, it's like lethal. But lethal isn't going to work when, you've got this source that keeps bringing these predators in. So it's like Hannah was talking about, we need strategies. And, for example, in the area where I've been working, coyotes everywhere. They're a huge predator. If we just tried to do lethal, they're canines. They keep reproducing, and they just sort of fill in the gap. So one of the strategies that we think about is there a timing where a coyote hunt would help? Predator management rather needs thinking and strategies and building into recovery plans, but it is a big piece of it.
I think you answered the question. I just wondered what the status was federally, but apparently Colorado has a robust population.
Right, they're not federally listed.
As threatened or
no.
Anything else?
No, they're not a species of concern on there.
Right. In the western states, we're probably in the most severe position with the population.
Range-wide? I mean, we're certainly
in
trouble.
Yeah, other states, adjoining states.
Yeah, they're actually extinct in Oregon. Oregon tried to do a reintroduction in northeastern Oregon.
Oh.
Concurrent at the we often were with them, working together to capture birds, and they were bringing birds to Oregon while we were bringing them to Washington, and that reintroduction failed, apparently. The amount of wintering habitat was inadequate.
They're in the upper Midwest, too.
Yeah, that's a different subspecies. Yeah,
it's a huntable bird in northern Michigan. Yeah.
And I have to agree with what Mr. Carpenter said about the predator management on a deal, especially with the ravens. But anyway, I know you keep saying it isn't going to have any effect, but it's no different than on my place where we've done a lot of salmon restoration in our county. You would think hopefully the regulations would be going the other way. No, they're not. This spring, I needed a new cutting permit to log on my place, which I've been getting them for 30-plus years. I swear to God, I did not think I was going to get a cutting permit this spring because they had said that an intermittent stream was a fish-bearing stream, and finally I just signed it off. But that being said, until we contact county commissioners in the affected area and get their blessings, I'll assure you I'll be a no vote. Because I do feel for this to be a working deal, we're going to have local buy-in. Because the top down, this is the way it's going to be, is destined to fail. If we can get it so that the local people will sign on to it and agree to it, then I'll buy on if we can get county commissioners to go with that. But up until then, no, I won't vote for it.
I wanted to get back to that predator management. I think in the sharp-tailed grouse plan, it talks about predator and the primary ones being coyotes and owls and crows and ravens. But it was interesting to me that it didn't go jump right away to let's go kill crows and ravens and coyotes. It talked about, I think, one of the carcass dumps that the Department of Transportation has near Yakima, and I know there's others around that draw those predators to an area, and then you've got problems, you know. So it's not always just go kill something. Mm-hmm. It can be some other things that have to be looked at. And I would counter what my fellow commissioner says just a little bit. Sure, public input is important in this process, and county commissioners are some of that public input. But that area of Douglas County, where a lot of this activity is going on in Lincoln County, they've been doing this stuff for years. I mean, they want programs that help them keep kind of marginal cropland in grassland. And they're used to this. They're used to this around sage grouse, and they're used to doing programs cooperatively. I don't know that you'd see a big outlash from folks that said, oh, my gosh, you know, this thing got uplisted. It's the other way around, I believe, is that it could bring more resources to the table that could end up, some of it, in ranchers' and farmers' pockets because they need some funds to keep this ground in grassland.
Well, and that being said, Jay, I'll agree with you because we took salmon restoration in our county and turned a negative into a positive. But there again, before I will sign on to it, I would like the locals to give us their nod of yes. And that's what I'm going to say. Because, no, we did. The salmon restoration, our part of the world, it was a positive. Truly was. But there again, for us to sit here in Olympia and dictate to them, I have got issues with that.
Okay. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There's a question of process. This is a briefing and a public hearing. I see on the January agenda that this comes up for a decision. There's a staff recommendation in the PowerPoint for threatened based on criteria that are in the recovery plan. So I'm just wondering how this goes forward between now and January, if there's a way of satisfying some of the concerns expressed on the table about maybe changes to the recovery plan, hypothetically about predators or some other good ideas, consultation with people affected and this and that before it comes up for a decision. So it's a question of
what's the process?
You want me to?
Yeah, yeah. What?
I don't know that I don't know that I have the full answer to what's the process. Certainly, it's ultimately the commission's decision on where the status lands. We could work internally in the next month to talk about revised draft objectives, criteria. And bring some of that forward. I would hesitate to say that we would have something fully cooked and ready to go, but just that short time frame and the holidays. I want to make sure we get good input from our conservation partners and our research scientists, etc. But certainly we could work on the refining those objectives. And like I said to Commissioner Thorburn earlier, we do have some draft strategy that Derek's been working on that just it's in my inbox. I haven't even looked at it yet, but so we have some of those materials that we're building.
Any other comments on that?
Yeah. I'm going to go back and forth on this a little. I was just thinking about what he said, though, and it is important to get that public local input, and maybe there's a way that we could flesh that out, whether it's commissioners doing it or staff doing it. You know, conservation districts are a big player in this. They have really good connections to the landowners in those areas in particular, and that would be a very good source of information. You know, what do you think about an upgrade? And also, it is our decision to make here. I mean, we need that input, but the final say isn't with the county commissioners. It's we need that input, but it's about this species, and I still feel there tends to be some overriding factors here. If we don't do it now, we'll probably be doing it in 3 years, unless we have some hugely successful translocation efforts. Right. So, I mean, that's a species-specific decision based on their population and based on the science, hopefully with good public input.
Right, and that piece about...
Yeah, just like... From my perspective,
I don't want to rush you. I don't want to look at this in January and be asked to vote on something. Penny, did you want to say something?
Yeah, oh. When you're finished.
Okay. I don't want to vote on something that I'm not sure is going to work. I don't want a hypothetical that we think this might work. There better be an 85-90% chance that it's going to work, or we'll postpone it. There's not a month isn't enough time to put together the protocols that we know is going to fix the problem. And I don't want to fix something that's just prolonging the agony. I want to know that we're doing something that's meaningful. That's my view.
I just wanted to clarify a little bit about the recovery plan. So the recovery plan goes through an extensive process, including public comment. And so your decision here is in no way tied to the recovery plan. It sets some objective criteria. Also, what's set in that recovery plan are some strategies that are perfectly valid and really what are needed to recover that species. But as to your question about will it work, what we're really constrained by is the resources to implement those plans. So to your point, yes, predator management, habitat work, like all of those components of the recovery plan need to be implemented in order for a real impact to be had and for us to be successful in recovery of that species. It's your decision as the commission as to if an uplisting is going to give us some more leeway to try to be successful, to try to get more resources to dedicate to the cause of recovery of sharptails.
Thank you, Penny and Hannah and Derek. I think I was the one who kind of threw in recovery plan when the decision before us is its listing status. I threw it in because if we do uplist, as I'm advocating, we're going to have to go into the recovery plan anyway, and we clearly need to go into the recovery plan, in my opinion, just given that we've been doing it for a while and we're still going in the wrong direction. And the main reason that I brought up the recovery plan is it's my hope and opinion with a good communication plan that we can, when we uplist, just have that much more strength in our ability to get those resources that we need to carry out these recovery activities.
And I don't want to leave anybody in here thinking I'm anti-recovery, because there again, in our county, we had the first written model watershed in the state. There is not one watershed of any significance in our county that hasn't had restoration work done. The only thing of it is, we were given the opportunity. It took a little while to get local buy-in. It took a while, but once we did, then it snowballed and went, and it's been very, very successful. And it's just me personally, when it starts, people start sensing from the top down, you just get pushback. It's just kind of the way we roll on the east side, and that's the way it is. So that was why I would really like to see, in my heart of hearts, that we have some local. Jay says there is. I guess I just want a little more confirmation on a deal. If there's local buy-in and they feel that it's going to be turn a liability into an asset, which we did in our county. We took a liability and damn well turned it into an asset. We took terrible, terrible feed yards and made dandies out of them. Everybody won. But that's how it was phrased right from the start. Before we do a project on your place, the fish are going to win, and you're going to win. So I just didn't want to leave everybody that I was anti-recovery.
Just clarifying process with our with legal, but I believe if you decided to uplist that there could be another process we would have to go through, because that is not what we currently have in our rulemaking process. So there might be one more step that we would have to jump through. Yes. So it wouldn't, just to clarify, so that it would not be finished at the next meeting.
Okay. Brad. No, I'm going to agree with all these folks, and particularly Larry. I don't think there should be a rush on this. I mean, and I agree with Jay. Let's get some on-the-ground input. You know, and specifically, I think most of the folks in those areas understand recovery of a species now pretty well, but does the change from threatened to endangered bother people? And is there a fear that this is going to cause them some type of problem in their farming operation, their livelihood, or whatever? And you know, just get some of that input and talk to county commissioners. There's no rush. I mean, we're just trying to make the right decision.
We have, it's not a next month issue, right?
Chair Smith, members of the commission, I think we would certainly try to work this as soon as possible, because this is an issue that's already been brought forward to you.
Well, he said we couldn't do it in January.
Well, you can make a decision in January regardless, but there still might be a process within rulemaking that would require us to go back out for public comment through it. So, Chair Smith and members of the commission, happy to discuss with you offline if the way you would like us to do this outreach to the community. Certainly, we're happy to do that and
that
coordinate.
Can be folded into all of this now. You have a question.
I'm kind of Jay's mind on these things, too, and that people have enough time to... Oh, yeah. Okay. That's a pretty safe thing to say. Yeah. I consider this significant that we move to uplisting. I also see the really precarious position we are in with these birds. I would like to see some assurance that uplisting is going to make a difference. Right now, these birds are in dire straits, and obviously to save this population, we need to do something. And now, I'm not preaching against uplisting. I do agree with Mr. Holtzmiller that we need to communicate with the ranchers that are impacted by this. But the other Jay's right, too. This is a decision where we're going to have to salvage a species, and that ultimately is what we're deciding on. And that is up to us. But I would like to have some confidence that uplisting is going to add more vigor to the program, that we're going to see some kind of increased effort or support from that community so that we can see some progress. Right now, I'm, you know, it's very sad to see this bird in the condition that it's in. And I haven't seen anything to give me hope other than the transportation that, as Commissioner Thornburn has pointed out, is only just sort of propping up the existing population. And I think I agree with her that we're below biological sustainability. Yeah. So...
Yeah, Commissioner Grable, I guess I would absolutely support what you're saying and point out that one of the reasons why we still have sharptails and sage grouse in our state is through the private land incentive program, through the Farm Bill. We owe a lot of the habitat that we have to right. our private landowners, so they're a big part of the puzzle.
Just out of curiosity, is there you've heard sort of the sentiment here, and we've heard from you. Is there any reason other than a fairly arbitrary number that was set a few years ago that you all aren't suggesting uplisting? I'm just wondering.
And we talked about this a little bit offline as well. I don't think that we here within the department, there have been several of us, too, on the fence about which way to go. And all the considerations that we've all been talking about here are absolutely on our minds as well. And so we maintained our recommendation consistent with our recovery plan because it was not... it was done not very long ago, and we're maintaining our process. I don't think there's any... I don't have any heartburn about there being an uplisting. And certainly the criteria, if you look at the definitions in the WAC between threatened and endangered, there's a very easy case to be made for endangered status for this species.
Thank you. I've been lucky to go to some of these meetings. The number wasn't arbitrarily set. It was scientifically set at the time it was written. You know, they may not have had the best science, but it was, as I recall, it was the best number they could come up with. But having said that, there's a lot of other factors that were also included, not just a number. So, and that's where we talk about the connectivity, the little spots of habitat that have a few birds. You know, it's different than if you were to look at, you know, one of the states that has a lot of birds over across a large swath of sagebrush territory. We're kind of not in that condition. So I think that's important to note. There was other factors other than just a number that are allowed to be used if you're thinking about threatened or endangered.
Just a response. Thank you for that. I often say things that could be misinterpreted. By arbitrary, I just meant the 400 and something number. I'm not sure that is alone an indicator of whether something should be endangered or not. And I was asking if there was any other factors that we were kind of missing, because I think that graph right there kind of tells it all, at least yeah. to me.
Right. And the decline that we've seen since that time, since it was written, and the increased, you know, or the missing connectivity between subpopulations and, you know, the more we think about things, of course, always the sort of more refined our thinking becomes. And so I think that's the situation we're in.
I suggest, kind of you said offline, you guys talk to J1, J2?
Which one is which?
They're on that side of the rocks and do that. Okay. And then we are running late, so we have public comment on it, yeah.
Thank you for the vibrant discussion.
Thank you.
And we do have a few folks. So, Dennis DeSilvis, I'll call you up first, and you get two times because you're representing two groups. So you can be the Gemini of the day.
I am indeed. Boy, this is a great discussion you guys have had. It's phenomenal. I love it. Chair Smith, members of the Commission, Director Unsworth, Deputy Director Storr, good afternoon. I'm Dennis DeSilvis, representing the Wildlife Diversity Advisory Council. We disagree with the recommendation to retain the Columbian sharp-tailed grouse on the state list of endangered, of threatened species. And we instead suggest it be placed on the state list of endangered species. You have our letter of recommendation and the basis for our opinion. I'm not going to be saying anything here that you haven't already said, but I did want it to be part of the public record. Despite closing hunting for the Columbian sharp-tailed grouse in 1988, adding it to the state list of threatened species in 1998, having the recovery plan in 2012, improving habitat, and translocating additional birds into the state in recent years, their numbers have declined to as few as 608 birds in 2017. Now, that graph doesn't actually say this, but that's an 89% loss since 1970. 89%. It is very important to note that the 608 birds represents birds in eight locations in, with the following numbers, and I want to repeat this these numbers. 78, 14, 34, 122, 52, 64, 112, 132. 200 is a viability number. They use that in Idaho. Perhaps the most serious threat to sharp-tailed grouse recovery, which in our opinion was undervalued in the PSR, is the harmful effects on population health due to this disjointed, fragmented population structure. This has been reiterated by staff and also from some of the commissioners. To underscore our concern regarding the status, the whole is less than the sum of the parts. In summary, the WDAC recommends that the Columbian sharp-tailed grouse be placed on the state list of endangered species. The overall population of 608 is small, and each of the eight subpopulations is very small and getting smaller. Connectivity between these subpopulations continues to be reduced, and recent wildfires and genetic loss threaten long-term statewide population viability. By state definition, endangered means any wildlife species native to the state of Washington that is seriously threatened with extinction throughout all or a significant portion of its range within the state. The Columbian sharp-tailed grouse certainly meets this criterion.
Thank you. And, yeah.
Chairman, genetic loss caught my ear.
Yeah, that was in. Take a look in the PSR. It's some of the information is in there. When you have populations that are in local areas, there's no connectivity to get more, for example, females into one area or more males into another area to mix that population up a little bit more. It's just like fish. Maybe you can understand that.
I can understand the fish part. What I couldn't understand is bringing in a genetic strain from Utah is not a genetic problem if these individual little subpopulations is a genetic problem. But maybe I can catch up with you later.
And you can switch hats now.
I'm going to switch hats. Yeah. And I just, first of all, I want to say that I totally agree with the previous speaker.
We got an extra seat up here.
Okay, this is my Tahoma Audubon Society, Commissioners, Director Unsworth, and Deputy Director. We recommend uplisting to endangered species, and we're a long way. Now, I'm going to talk a little bit about recovery here, a little bit. It says, Washington is a long way from meeting the recovery objectives outlined in the 2012 recovery plan. For example, downlisting sharp-tailed grouse from its current threatened status to sensitive status. Think about that. You're going to downlist it. What does it take to do that? And that is when Washington has at least one population averaging greater than 2,000 birds, and the statewide population averages more than 3,200 birds. That's for a 10-year period. The plan also states that the sharp-tailed grouse will be considered for uplisting from state threatened to state endangered if the population drops below 450. While the current population could be as few as 608, we believe that the highly fragmented population structure, relative lack of connectivity, and increased wildfires suggest that the recovery criterion is too low. and that a more precautionary approach is required. Uplisting sharp-tailed grouse today is especially timely because of the naturally fluctuating population character of sharp-tailed grouse, and because the mean subpopulation size is only 76, which together places this bird at short-term risk with extinction at the subpopulation level. And we also suggest that the 2012 recovery plan be reviewed and objectives reevaluated with a more precautionary approach considered due to the changing conditions on the ground. Speaking of ground, it's too bad that the sharp-tailed grouse as a ground kind of bird isn't able to testify or give input at the county level like people are. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dennis. Always a pleasure. And Ben Saliski, please.
Greetings, Commissioners, and thank you for the opportunity to comment on the sharp-tailed grouse status review. My name is Ben Saliski, and I'm speaking today on behalf of Audubon, Washington. Audubon, Washington is deeply engaged in the ecosystem protection of the Columbia Plateau and works closely with our local Audubon chapters and department staff on a number of projects, including our Sagebrush Songbird Community Science Program, our habitat connectivity outreach work with private landowners in Yakima County, and our support with grouse surveys in the spring. We'd just like to acknowledge and express our appreciation for the work that WDFW staff has done in the support of Colombian sharp-tailed grouse recovery in our state. However, we disagree with the staff recommendation that the sharp-tailed grouse be retained as threatened and instead recommend it be uplisted as a state endangered species. We are concerned that the 8 remaining subpopulations in Washington are at severe risk of extirpation due to loss of connectivity, rangeland fire, and decreasing genetic diversity. Inadequate funding for recovery plan implementation and lack of local support for recovery are additional risk factors of the concern. For example, our office was contacted just this week by a concerned citizen regarding a new ordinance in Okanagan County that would allow off-road vehicle use in the Tunk Valley, which is a very important area for breeding and connectivity of the species. The recovery plan states that uplisting to endangered status will be considered when the overall population drops below 450 individuals. However, the department acknowledges that subpopulations less than 200 are not likely to persist. The subpopulations currently range in size from 14 to 132 individuals, suggesting that all 8 subpopulations are at extreme risk for extirpation. We would appreciate clarification from the department on the biological justification for the 450 population threshold for uplisting, and express that a prudent decision today would be to uplist Washington sharp-tailed grouse as endangered. The recovery plan lists a number of recovery strategies, tasks, and associated priority levels. However, it's difficult to get a sense from the department's vision for a cohesive recovery strategy, how specific recovery tasks are being sequenced in support of recovery goals, and the support of partners in recovery implementation. A review of the recovery plan with an eye towards making these connections more explicit is needed. We encourage the department to engage and work with partners on this effort so as to leverage the capacity and reach of external organizations in accelerating recovery for the Colombian sharp-tailed grouse. Thank you very much, and please direct any questions to Trina Boehner, Director of Bird Conservation at Audubon, Washington. Thank you.